If I'm thirsty, I'm thinking Tailwind Nutrition, especially if I'm holding a 20-ounce bottle or a hydration pack.
You know, we love our relationship, our partnership with Tailwind Nutrition. It started how long ago, Don? 5 years ago, maybe?
It's one of our supporters right from the start that allowed us to do this.
And if you haven't been listening to Trail Runner Nation for a long time, the way that we got hooked up with this company was we were doing a podcast with our favorite sports nutritionist, Sunny Blendy. And she said, hey, guys, you need to try this new company. It's out of Colorado. It's called Tailwind Nutrition. And I was just looking online. When we first started talking to Tailwind Nutrition, I think they were working out of their kitchen or their garage. They were only selling online. And I just logged on to tailwindnutrition.com. And if you go to the stores page, there are hundreds of stores here just in the United States that are retail stores for Tailwind Nutrition. And the beautiful thing is Tailwind Nutrition is all about the community, all about trying to help the community. If you see a store that's not in your immediate area, there's some links down at the bottom where you can refer a store or tell Tailwind Nutrition, hey, you know, there's a store down the street from me that isn't carrying Tailwind Nutrition, and you can let them know, and they'll go talk to that store and see if they can get them set up so you can have it local there. So it's just kind of a great American dream story to come true. And I have to say the reason why it has is because it's a great product.
I'm with you, Scott. I felt a sense of pride walking into some local running stores and seeing Tailwind Nutrition. It's like, you know, it's like walking by the playground and seeing your kid hitting a 3-point shot from outside. You know, I just felt proud.
Is that what it was like?
It was kind of like that.
Okay, I can relate.
Because I was looking at the green tea caffeinated, and that's definitely a 3-point shot for me. I love that flavor.
I like the buzz.
Go over to our partners page, find the Tailwind Nutrition icon, and bang, click on over there, and you're standing in front of an aid station. Ultra Running Magazine, my favorite book of all time. It's not a book. It's a magazine.
It's a magazine.
Otherwise, they'd say Ultra Running Book.
Hey, you know, one of the cool things that Ultra Running Magazine has done is now you can take it anywhere you go, even if you forgot it at your home. If you're a subscriber, you can go to ultrarunning.com and they have digital copies there. You sign in with your username and password and you can see all of the past issues. In fact, you can create your own reading list. In my reading list right now, I have two from the October 2016 issue. One of my favorite columns is the Ask Ann column. And this one is actually kind of interesting. It's about the role of women in ultra running over the past couple decades.
And then there's another. Ann Trason's perspective would be very interesting to read.
Yeah, I haven't read the whole thing. That's why it's on my reading list. The other one is a article by Joe Juhan called Body Language, which it uses ultra form and efficiency, body language, which sounds really fascinating to me. Those are two that I have not read. That's why it's on my digital reading list. So if you go to ultrarunning.com, there's a link on the top that says digital archive. You have to be logged in. You have to be a subscriber to get to that. But that's just kind of a cool thing. So you can have these magazines at your touch at any time.
So if you want to subscribe, go to Trail Runner Nation, go to the partners page and link on over and get a discount. Scott, what is that discount and what is the final cost?
You know, if you go to our partners page, Trail Runner Nation has a promotion where you can get 25% off a current subscription for 1 year. It turns out to be $29.95, which is the best deal on the planet.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
This might be one of the most interesting podcasts ever. Oh, that's what you're doing. There's a bunch of, like, old brothel hookers, like, buried out here.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything. From here on out, it's all open.
It's all fair game.
It's all fair game, gentlemen. So, are we ready?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Mm-hmm. We'll just go. Let's go in order.
In order. What's the order?
Hey, AJW, why don't you kick this off from the executive producer on the East Coast?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Trail Runner Nation. This is Andy Jones Wilkins.
I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott War, and we have...
I'm Travis Macy. Great to be back with you guys.
You know, this is an exciting podcast. We're going to be talking about running. and between AJW, I've been doing some really in-depth searches on the internet, in the depths, the far reaches of the internet. And I think between AJW and Travis, they have like over 225 ultras between the two of them. That's a lot of freaking miles.
That'll get you to the moon. I think. I'm going to have to do some math on this. I mean, we're close.
It's around the world, like, I think, 50 times.
Very cool.
And today's podcast, we actually are going to do this in a little bit different. The title is what, Don?
The title is, if it were only running, I would have quit a long time ago. With the subtitle, there must be something more to this.
Mm-hmm. And rather than just getting into this topic like a normal podcast or normal people would be conversing about this, we've decided to put a little bit of a spin on it. And this is the brainchild, again, of Don Freeman. Don, you want to tell us how we're going to talk about running being more than running?
Well, you know, we've each come with three words in classic TRN rules. If you haven't received your rule book, text or message Scott in some way. He'll get you a copy of it. And we're taking three words that help best describe, if it was a one-word title, what we've learned from this sport. And then we're just going to kick it around the table and talk a little bit. You know, I've noticed, I went and swept a race, a 50K race up here in the Auburn area this last weekend. And I had such respect for the guy that won the race and the last person coming through that for the cutoff for the finish line. And equally on each, you said, do you have more respect for the person up front or in the back? And I would say the same, just great respect. And it's awesome to see how much there is in the sport for all of us. It's more than running. As I was following her, she was talking a little bit about, isn't it great to be out here? I just love it. You know, I'm able to talk to people and just have a great time. It's fun to see what each side of that race course has in it. So a lot of fun. And these guys that are joining the podcast are going to be great to share on this.
You know, I have to say, I was at, I don't know what mile marker it was. I was just on the other side of 49. What mile marker was that, Don?
I don't know.
Is that like probably mile, they started to overlook. It had to probably be maybe mile
25.
Okay. Let's say 25. And the lead runner was flying. I mean, he was doing, of course it was a little bit of downhill, but he had to be doing like 5 or 6 minute miles. And I can appreciate how Andy Jones Wilkins and Travis Macy, what speed they're going at the front of the pack like that. That is freaking fast. I could never do that.
So with that said, AJW, why don't you kick this thing off with a word?
All right. I'm going to go with faith.
Faith. Ooh. All right. So this is a life lesson or something faith. Beyond just running. Faith.
Ultra running, long distance running has taught me a lot about faith. And I mean, that can be a somewhat loaded word, especially in a political season like this. But I believe that what we do when we're going out there and we're getting after it and we're trying to, you know, just even meet our own expectations or on occasion exceed them, it's got to be a little bit about faith. We've got to believe in ourselves. We've got to believe in what's going on. We've got to believe in our training. And I think what running is, if it was just running, I'm not sure I would have the faith in who I am and what I can be that running gives me.
Mm.
You know, I'll parlay on that. I think that even while you're in a race, you got to have faith that you're going to make it through a hard spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's times where you just go, you know what, this isn't worth it. I there's no way I can go to the next aid station. And you got to have faith that old ultra running saying that keep going, you're going to eventually get better. It's going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to have faith that that's going to happen or else you wouldn't. You'd quit. There'd be too many quitters.
And so, Travis, you probably noticed that the roundtable requires all to speak and give an opinion on whatever word. Yeah. So maybe going forth here isn't, you know, something you want to do, because I'm ready.
Do want to go forth, and I am. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think that that might have been word number four on my, or maybe five on my top three list, and that's my dad. As I talk about in the book I wrote, you know, my dad did all these ultras back in the day, and made a big influence on me, and you know, I know some other people. And one of my dad's favorite saying is "keep the faith," and mm-hmm. I think it's exactly what Andy said there. It's, you know, especially in these challenging times, whether it's running or another area of your life, keeping that faith. You know, that faith in yourself that you can do it, and that even though it's hard, you will come out on the other side, and that you're capable of doing it. I would agree. And I think that's one of the best things about running is it teaches you to have that faith that you can then carry over to the rest of your life. And it really, you know, hopefully I can jump ahead, but it connects strongly to the first word I wrote down, when asked this question, and that was resilience. And I think that those two things are very much tied. I feel like a lot of the resilience that I've learned for life in general comes from my experiences as a runner and multi-sport endurance athlete.
I have a question for the two coaches on the line, Andy and Travis. How do you coach faith? How do you tell someone or coach someone or how does someone develop faith? Is that just an experiential thing or can you coach it?
That's a really good question. And I guess I have a couple parts of the answer. My initial thought is the first piece there is teaching a growth mindset. So this is something I think maybe you guys have talked about this before. It's outlined in a book called Mindset by a psychologist named Dweck. And she's got a lot of the book is awesome. There's a whole bunch of videos and stuff online about it, but basically, in a growth mindset, a person believes they can get better, and that means they believe they could get smarter, they could get faster, you know, they could become a better professional, and they also believe that they can improve their mindset. So that's the first key is, you know, helping someone develop this growth mindset, especially if they start with, you know, negative stories or beliefs around the idea of, you know, I can't do it I'm not strong when things get tough or things like that. That's a fixed mindset. So I think that's the first piece is that growth mindset. And then experience is huge, you know, going through and doing something hard that builds into further belief. And then I would also say, I mean, I actually teach a course on mindset for athletes. It's called the Ultra Mindset for Endurance Athletes. And, you know, I think that mindset is so important that it's worth working on specifically, you know, and that's through, readings and conversations and, you know, studying just like you would, study to pass a math test or just like you would train to, you know, get your legs to run a faster 5K. I think that mindset's so important that you can and should work on it specifically.
I would take, I agree with everything Travis said. I would also take that one step further in saying that I want an athlete that I'm working with to just absolutely believe in themselves. And especially when you're saying in the 3-4 weeks before a big focus event, they need to start blocking out any other expectations the world has for them and have it be about them. And if they've done the work and they've put in what it takes to succeed, whether it's in a marathon, a 50K, a 100-miler, a multi-day race, then they're gonna come into that race with the faith that they're going to get through. Then, and even more to the point, Scotty, your question is, what do you do when the faith starts to waver during the event? I mean, that's when the rubber really meets the road. And if you're working, you know, if you're working with somebody who's done 20, 30, 100-milers, that's a little different story than you're working with somebody who may have done half a dozen or may just be making a step from, you know, being a sub-elite runner to an elite runner. I mean, then you have to take literally a leap of faith, to pardon the pun there. And what that means is trying to teach somebody that they can exceed beyond their expectations, beyond their training, beyond even what maybe their coach thinks they can do. And those are the things when you see them happen around the sport, and you see them happen a lot the longer the distance is, that really makes you believe that, you know, faith and hope, you know, has a place in this sport.
Freeman, you haven't weighed in on faith.
Well, you know, I think it was it Dave Mackey that we talked to a long time ago when we first started the podcast, and he was talking about faith in his nutrition. And I'd really never thought of it that way, right? He knew that he could push his body very hard through this next section because his nutrition would be there for him. So I liked that term and word, faith, and that's how I remember hearing it. And I think it translates well into life from the trail, in that there are a lot of things that we just have to just believe in and expect it to happen based on our effort on the front end. So I think it translates well. A good practice field, the trail.
All right, who's next? Let's have Travis. Well, Travis, why don't you step in? Guest first.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd mentioned my first word was resilience, and I think maybe that's, you know, again, very closely related to faith. So maybe I'll jump ahead to the second one that I had wrote down, and that's calm. And for me, just running on a daily basis is so important for bringing a sense of calm to my life. You know, it's the habit of running and knowing that I can do it anywhere, and that, you know, I can do it in any weather, and, you know, having that as part of the routine for me is very calming. And then also just, you know, on a physical, mental, spiritual level, there's so many days where, you know, before the run, I'm feeling, you know, maybe it's rushed or overwhelmed or, you know, unsure or whatever. And then, you know, I head out and I go for a run and I come back and just feel completely like a different person and feel, you know, confident and at ease and patient, you know, with my work, patient and present with my young children. And I think a lot of people relate to that. You know, I think probably most people listening to this are nodding their heads and saying, oh, you know, that's a big reason I run too. So calm, that's a big one for me.
You know, you mentioned, and I was thinking of this the other day, and I'm glad that you brought it to the attention of the podcast. How many steps does it take for you to get down to the trail before that wash of life just kind of pushes by and now you're just one with the trail? How far down the trail does it take for you?
You know, for me personally, it really varies. You know, some days if I have a lot of mental chatter, you know, or a lot of thoughts, or, you know, God, how am I going to get to all these emails? Sometimes it might take a while, you know, it might take, God, an hour and a half or 2 hours, or, you know, it might even take to put it plainly, to the point where sort of suffering starts, where, you know, either I'm getting tired or I'm getting, you know, I'm breathing hard enough that I have to be totally sucked into the moment. So sometimes it takes a while. And then other times, you know, it might even just be like putting on my shorts and my socks and my shoes, you know, and then looking outside. And, you know, right now in Colorado, we got these golden aspen leaves, you know, just seeing those out in the yard and thinking, oh, pretty soon I'm going to be out on the trail with these all around me, you know, that's all it takes. So For me, it really varies.
Yeah, I would say that's one extreme to the next. AJW, how about you? What's your experience?
I was thinking about that just today, Don. I had one of those days of work that a school principal has where, you know, nothing went as planned and, you know, it seemed like everything was coming at me in all directions. I was like, oh my God, I can't wait to get out of here and get for a run. And, got home, got my stuff on, started running and just sort of felt blah. Was sort of running slowly and felt heavy and felt, you know, soreness in various places. And literally about 10, 11 minutes in, I almost felt a switch flip. And thankfully I only had time for an hour run, because once that switch flipped, I probably could have gone for a 3 or 4 hour run once I felt that. But then the other part of me, the other voice in my head said, oh, savor this feeling, enjoy it for the next 45 minutes. And then, you know, maybe it'll still be there tomorrow. And that to me is, but I'm with Travis too. It comes and goes, depending on the circumstance, but more often than not, it'll come pretty quickly. Once I'm out there, once I'm breathing, once I break a sweat, I'll get into that zone, into that flow state pretty quickly. And, my mind will go where it needs to go, and all will be right with the world. And I feel as though, in fact, the longer I've run, been a runner now for going on 30 years, I think it makes that much of a difference to me psychologically, my word, it was completely related to Travis's, was stillness. It's related to calm, but... You know, there's something interesting about having a 130 beats a minute and a steady breathing and pattering your feet. And maybe if you're on the roads, having cars go by you, but you still feel a sense of stillness, individual, independent stillness, where even the most extroverted person in the world who spends time with people all the time, like I do, can get centered in on just themselves and become still. And so I would connect calm and still, and you know what, at my best moments in big races, to get back to trying to help runners get centered in a big event, my best moments, mile 90 of Western States are when I'm able to come in and be still. It's hard to cross Highway 49 and have all the drama going on and be still, but if you can, you're probably winning. If you're not winning the race, you're winning the race in your own heart.
Yeah, that's good. How about you, Don? How long does it take you to get centered?
To get out there. You guys stated it so well. There's a big variable, but on the day that I thought about it, it seemed like it was six steps down that trail, bang, 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 and all of a sudden everything went away, and it was just great. And so it's nice when it happens quickly.
Were you counting the steps? Were they running or walking?
I count all my steps.
How many steps did you do in the run?
It was a 12 step. But I like the word calm, and I think that we do get a chance to practice calmness or stillness. We'll put them in the same group. Before a race, I mean, how many calories do we burn the night before, staying up late trying to get a bib pinned on, making sure everything's accounted for in drop bags? We learn that stillness and to prepare early, and that can apply again in real life when we have to prepare something and get something that's a big event and that's outside of running, and navigate our way through that. I think we learn a lot from the trail.
You know, I'm going to, if you don't mind, I'd like to throw my word in there, because I think it's somewhat related to the word I had was therapy.
And, nice.
And, you know,
I hear you.
For me, it doesn't matter how chaotic my personal life is or professional life is, when you think that things are just all tied up in knots and you almost feel paralyzed at some points. If you go out on a run and you finish that run, it always makes things better. I don't think I've ever been in a situation where I've come back from a run more in knots than when I started. It's always been good therapy. Things come together, thoughts come to mind. You get to that calm or that still part of the run, and that's when things start making sense. And 1 and 1 equals 2, and you can make very calm, very wise decisions on the trail. So that's one of the reasons why I think running is more than running. It's therapy for me.
Gentlemen, yeah, any comments on therapy?
I absolutely agree. I mean, that's, you know, a lot of what I meant by that, you know, by that same word of calm. And I think that's true for a lot of runners, you know, probably most of the runners I know and athletes I coach. I think we all find that peace of mind.
You know, I've actually dug pretty deeply into this, Scotty, and I think that when you look at it from a metaphorical standpoint, right? When you're in therapy, you have this other person pulling something out of you, or pulling, whether it's physical therapy or psychological therapy or marriage counseling or, you know, family therapy, or what that person's role who's facilitating that is supposed to be doing, right, is pulling out of you that which you can't necessarily pull out yourself, which I get. I completely get it. But I also know, as a now 30-year runner, I can actually do that given the right circumstances, given the right, you know, environment for a run. I can have that same literally therapeutic experience on a run. And to the extent that I don't even sometimes remember when the run is over why it was therapeutic, but I do remember that it was therapeutic. And I think that's to me the essence of part of that transcendent part of running is you don't necessarily know why stuff is happening, but it happens, and you can be a better person and move on from it because it happened. And we're not saying you're like ignoring the rest of your life or being negligent or being some sort of bad person by just going out and being self-absorbed and running. You're actually going out and making yourself better and in so doing, making those around you better by engaging in this activity.
You know, I agree. And I was going to say, now I forgot what I was going to say. You had me going there, Andy. You had me going there. No, I was going to say, I can't remember. You're going to have to edit that out. I had such a good thing to say, and I just...
I can say some. I think I know what you were going to say.
Good.
I've pulled it out of your... You didn't know what it was, but I pulled it out.
Thank you.
Through the therapeutic process. And what that is that... let's see. What was it?
I remember.
I think I... What it is simply that... I really lost it.
Don't worry, guys. I'm gonna edit all this for you guys. Don't worry. Don't worry, friends.
That was a train wreck.
So this is what I was, as Andy was talking, I was thinking, you know, sometimes you get out on that run and you get into it and you have all these things that you're worrying about, and by the end of the run you're just thinking, all that stuff I was worrying about really doesn't matter. It brings priorities into check, is what I was going to say. You just think, you know what, that thing I've been worrying about, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. So that was worth it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, John, how about your first word?
Well, I'm not ready for that, because I want to hit one more on therapy, because I didn't get to put my 2 cents in, I think it's a bit of a different angle. And how about therapy, just as in... elevated blood pressure. You know, it brings your blood pressure down when you're active. You start eating right, you get some exercise, boom. So, you know, there's a direct correlation, and some therapy and some calming and all of these and some, you know, some of these words that we put together. So my first word, gentlemen, I'm taking the tough trail. Straight up. Now, this is Webster's dictionary. It's the Vest Pocket Dictionary. All right, Andy, you're going to tell me the page number, and I don't know what it's going to be. Scott, you're going to tell me how many words down, all right?
Okay.
Give me a page between 1 and 365, AJW.
Let's go with 216, page 216.
I'm going with 216 and the official
glasses.
Pocket version. 216, you said?
Yeah, 216.
And Scott.
How far down, Scott?
How many down?
Three words.
Three words down. The third word down is going to be nook. It's the inside corner. It's defined as the inside corner. And you know, here's the way that I look at nook as it relates to the trail and how it kind of just glides into our daily lives. And those that really master that nook, those that really get it down, they'll just shine in almost any and every activity they do. So the nook, you know, the small area in the corner where you know an activity is important, you need to get it done, you need to do that stretching, you need to do those small items that sometimes you try to push away. But in reality, the things that you're pushing away, that's what helps you become that better runner and helps separate you from last year's time. So quit pushing stuff into the corner, into that small nook, pull it out, do some stretching, eat right, get some therapy, run the hills, do some speed work, whatever you've been pushing away. So that's how I think nook kind of fits into this scheme.
I gotta jump in on this too. So there are all sorts of prognosticators out there on the internet who talk about how great races like Hard Rock and UTMB and especially Western States. My God, I am so sick of hearing about Western States.
Hashtag CN Squaw.
And there are
says the guy who talks about Western States all
absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. And yet there are all these other beautiful events that just have found a small little nook in a Ooh. Place in our hearts. Mm. These small little places like the Willis River 50K or the Overlook 50K that you right. guys just went to. Or so, you know, Tom Joad's 50K in Nebraska or the plain 100-miler that only has one aid station. So there's a place in the world for the nook.
Ooh.
The nook.
Strong.
Sport.
Very strong, AGW.
I might even just say a nook, when I think of it, I think of it as a sort of a comfortable, safe place to go.
Ooh.
And that's, you know, that for many people, that's running. You know, you've got this whole big world that much of it you can't control. And what can you control? What is a comfortable, safe place to go? Well, you can go on your run. You can choose where to go. You can go when you want. You can go as far as you want or as short as you want. You can go with whoever you want. That's a, you know, a comfortable, safe sort of place. So I'd say nook's right on.
Oh, good, good. Scott, you have something.
This is how I define nook. When I think of nook as it relates to running, the other words that come to mind are body glide, monkey butter, and run goo. You need to make sure that you are lubricating the nooks.
Oh, that's good.
That's good.
And it is true.
All right. That's so I think we
Andy's up.
Yeah. And Andy, you can always defer to the dictionary. If you want to go the dictionary route, you can. Whatever you like.
And actually if I can break the rules of order here, I got to go in 2 minutes to
Ooh.
take over on
that. Why don't Travis do one more word and then
okay, one more on bedtime duty, and I'm going to throw it and if I had to guess, I bet something like this or maybe the exact same word is probably on some of your words, and that word is community. And, you know, it's the same sense that makes a phone call or a Skype call like this fun for us. It's a reason that people are out there listening to it. It's just a, you know, a sense of to sound cliche, being part of something that's bigger than yourself. And I know that for me, that's a reason I keep coming back to races. It's a reason I love traveling around the world because I meet like-minded people at these kind of races from all kinds of countries. And, you know, think back on some of the best conversations you've had with friends. You know, you can say things and talk about things out on a long run in nature that, you know, that you might never get to if you're just hanging out or, you know, having a beer or whatever. So that community is, you know, it's huge, and it's really important.
Travis, we'll kick that term community around while you go out and do your bedtime duty. But before you leave us, we want to introduce a little segment we're going to be calling Ask the Coach. And Travis Macy is a great coach and has a great deal of experience. So we look forward to the future, hearing some of his words and wisdoms drop down on us.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. And I would, you know, back to that community, like, you know, it's just a chance to interact with people, hopefully help people. You know, I would say to the listeners out there, I'd love to hear your questions. You know, I think they can contact you guys. Maybe it's email, maybe it's Twitter, something else, but, you know, give us your questions and, hopefully we can help. And if we don't know the answer, we'll, you know, look in the dictionary at a random word and give us something about it. So
we'll just call AJW. If you want to know for sure,
yeah,
call Andy.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight, Travis.
Cool. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. Always love listening to the show, and it's just it's an honor to be part of it. So thank you.
You
thanks,
got it.
Travis.
All right. All right. We'll see you later,
guys. Bye-bye. All right. So community. That's a big one, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, for me, you guys, I mean, it's pretty simple. And my wife, I don't have to look any further than my wife, Shelly. She's like, you know, aside from us, your family, your best friends in the world are your running buddies. And it's true. I mean, my running community, and it's nationwide. I have a few, you know, few international friends. But, you know, the way in which I've been able to connect to the – and I've moved around a lot. You guys know that. I lived in California and Idaho and Arizona and now Virginia. But the thread through it all is the community of runners that I call my friends and my family. And, you know, it's a crescendo every year at Squaw Valley. But, you know, it's just part of what makes my life fulfilling. And I think at the same time as we've talked about calmness and stillness and needing to get out and get on therapy and get yourself figured out, having that community of people who you know are there for you, who understand what you do, who don't think you're a nutcase, who realize that after you get a hip surgery, of course you're going to run Hard Rock the next year, you know. I think that, to me, is sustaining, and that's a big part of this community.
Go ahead, Scott.
You know, I was going to say community is neat because you may not even know people. Like there was that race up in the Auburn area this week. It was Ann Trason's Overlook Trail Series. And, you know, I was just out there for a training run and ran into these people that were racing. And most of them I didn't even know. But I thought, this is my tribe. I get them and they get me. I think that's kind of it helps bring groundness to my being, knowing that there are people that I understand, even though I don't even know who they are. I there's some like-mindedness.
Yeah, and let me jump on that if I may, Scott. I've seen, you know, like you have many times, you're running past people and people that are hikers or walkers or bird watchers or, you know, whatever they're doing. But when you come across that ultra runner, there's a or trail runner, there's a direct eye to eye contact. You know, hello, who are you? How are you? There's just a checking in point where you feel a special energy and a relationship as you go by one another. And I don't feel that same attraction with, like you say, other tribes or other groups. So something special about, you know, your community, even whether it's loose or tight.
And at the risk of derailing the conversation too much, I mean, I think anybody listening to you all every week knows that you're a huge part of what's brought this community together. I mean, when you envision Trail Runner Nation, what is it now, Don, 6-7 years ago? How yeah. long you guys?
We've kind of lost track, but
yeah, about 5 or 6 years.
Five or six years ago. I mean, who knew that it would become this way in which people connect? And Megan and Brian at I Run Far, and other people who have found a way to tap into the, you know, the piece about the community discussion that I think needs more pardon the, you know, redundancy, more discussion, is this community sucks people in because they lack community elsewhere. And I think that's, and you know, they find like-minded people here, sure. But they also, you know, many of our other institutions that we might have counted on in our civilization 25, 50, 100 years ago are not around anymore. This one's alive and well. We really do have a tribe. We really do have a family. We really do have a feeling of, you know, yes, we're friendly competitors, but my gosh, when you see, you know, the top five runners at the end of a race hanging out with one another, there's nothing about this sport that suggests to me, whether you talk about growth in the sport or money or performance enhancing drugs or all the other hot button issues, I think the community ultimately is going to trump all of those, and no one is going to sacrifice the good, strong sense of family for that stuff. And for personal glory, for individual, you know, accomplishment. And, you know, we see people come and go. We see people like us who've been around for a long time. But the community's here to stay. That's the bedrock. And I'm so glad that Travis parted with that, because that should never be forgotten.
Yeah. I was at that race we've referred to a number of times. And I see so many of the volunteers at the aid stations that are either fellow runners or runners a generation or so in front of us that just still want to be part of community. Even though they're not putting those miles in, the community is still there, welcomes them. They're still part of it. They have all that experience behind them, and we can see it. So it's nice to see that there's a long-term plan for our tribe members.
And I will say, part of the definition of community is not just a selfish taking from the community. It's also giving back to the community. You know, at some point you're not part of the community unless you are giving back, right? You know, even those elite runners that are doing, you know, 12, 15, 20 races a year, and training their behinds off, they're still giving back too. And I think that's, I almost have as much fun and self-fulfillment giving back to the community as I do taking from the community.
I know we've talked a lot about this, but I want to talk about one more thing related to this, and that's, quite frankly, Michigan Bluff at Western States. At the Memorial Day training camp this past year, we counted up, there were 108 Western States finishes working the aid station at Michigan Bluff training camp. I mean, none other than Ann Trayson, you know, Ray Scannell, Tim Tweetmeyer. I mean, you had people there. The people running through had no idea the royalty they were among. And then a month later, because I was hanging out at Michigan Bluff for a long time, I was there as that many of the same cast of characters was hanging out. When Jim Walmsley came through, they all remembered, like, what time Jurek came through and what time Annie came through, what time Tom Johnson came through. They're there now volunteering. They're in their 60s. They're having a party because it's Western States weekend. But they're part of that community, and I wanted nothing more than to just sit there and sort of soak it all in because of being a Western States junkie. But you see that community, and I'm sure you see it along in Forest Hill and at Highway 49 and at Green Gate and at Robinson Flat and in other races like Hard Rock and Angeles Crest and, you know, in little races like you guys were at Overlook and our races back here at Promised Land or Grindstone or, you know, MMT. It's part of who we are. We are tribal. And I think we won't lose it. And it's how we end up being sort of watchdogs on all this other stuff, like over commercialization or drugs or anything like that. I mean, the minute something like that comes up, we're like, bam, you know.
Not in my house.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, who's up for a word? Or
are we? Andy's up.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm going to bring it down a little bit because, and I previewed this one with you guys, and that's failure. You know, I do I'm a firm, as an educator, as a longtime ultra marathon runner who's had his fair of successes and his share of failures. I think we mustn't ignore the fact that we learn from failure, whether it's a really unfortunate DNF or an unsatisfactory result in a race, or even, you know, building up our training and getting injured and not even being able to start. We have to be able to deal with failure. And, you know, I've said on this podcast before, we're sort of raising a generation of kids, at least, that are overly insulated from failure, who we're trying to protect from any sort of failure, you know, the sort of everybody gets a trophy culture. And I think ultra running, long distance trail running, teaches us that, you know, a certain amount of failure is okay. That failure doesn't need to be a dirty word. That failure can actually be a positive. You guys had Scotty Mills and I on a couple of months ago after our Hard Rock experience. I mean, in the immediate shadow of that race, I thought of it as a failure. You know, I finished in 41, just under 42 hours. I probably expected to finish, you know, half a day at least before then. And while I might still consider it a failure in kind of my grand scheme of things, I consider it a success in what I learned from it and who I am now, just a few months later. You know, one would think that somebody in midlife might, you know, not have anything left to learn or just kind of go through the motions or move on to the next thing. But this sport teaches us that you take the good with the bad, and sometimes you learn more from the bad than the good. And I think we mustn't lose sight of that. And for young people coming into the sport, what I really, really hope is when a lot of these young people, you know, they're sort of plateau peaks and they come on back down, that they don't leave the sport, that they don't bail on us, that they do go and perhaps run in some less prestigious races, that they volunteer, that they put themselves out as race directors and as crew people. And I mean, some of the most talented runners I know from my formative years are now race directors, and they're great race directors, and they're race directors all over the country, and they're putting on events that are, you know, where new runners are coming every day. You can bet that those people have had their share of failure, and yet now they're living this successful life and maybe even making a living doing something that they love. So that to me is the positive spin on failure.
So if we took your at your school, AJW, and we took it, do you guys use chalkboards or do you use the whiteboards?
No, we have some of both. We're a somewhat traditional school, so there's some schools with whiteboards, some schools with blackboards.
So we're going blackboard or old school style.
Let's go blackboard chalk. Yeah.
So and we make two columns, and we have a on the left hand side all the great things that have happened to us in our races, in our running, in our trainings, all of those things. And then we, for stories, I'm talking about stories. And in the right-hand column, we put all the miserable stories, all the crazy things that have happened to us. And I've got to say, the great stories reside on the right-hand side column, where the tragedy and the catastrophe happen, and then somehow we survived it and we tell the story. And I think most of those have come from failures of some kind. You failed to see you needed hydration. You failed to keep your pace down. Something happened to create a negative effect, and this story ends up in the right-hand column. And as I look back on my life and I say, and I think about running, I think about all the great stories on the right-hand side. I would hate not to have this failure happen. I wouldn't have anything on the right-hand side, and those are some of my fondest memories in ultra running.
They're the funnest ones to listen to.
Did any of that make sense?
Yeah.
It absolutely did. And even more to the point, they are the memories that tend to be the most visceral.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're, whether it's sitting on a cot at some aid station or barfing your guts out or realizing you're going to have this blister lanced or, you know, whatever it is, those memories, that's where time gets frozen, right? You're like, right. Oh my God, that was just, and you see the world passing by.
Right.
And you learn from that. You learn from that. Our good friend, Ian Torrance, I mean, I'll never forget this story. He's Cal 2 at Western States. He'd been puking all the way from Forest Hill down the Cal 2, and he's sitting on the cot, and he says to his pacer, Andy Roth, he's like, here comes the cavalry, you know, and he was just sitting there, and he ended up finishing, you know, he probably did 21 hours or something, but he wanted to do 18, you know, and the cavalry just came on by, and he just sat there and watched them.
Well, you know, and I have to chirp in here. The failures don't have to be at races. I had a training run on Saturday we were just talking about, and I would put it in that right column, Don, where it was a failure. I was out with some friends running, and I had to cut short. I said, "Keep going without me. I'll meet you back at the car." And you know, I could really get down on that, but just thinking about it, saying, you know what, at least I was out here, at least I put in some miles, and I'm going to be a much stronger and a much better because I was out here, even though it was a failure. So I think that we need to look at even those sloggy, terrible training runs and turn those training runs into building that faith that we were talking about at the very beginning. At least I'm out here and I'm working, and I'm going to be better because of it.
So if we allow ourselves to fail in this on the trail, why don't we, or should we, or do we, or how many of us do, look at life failures in the same context?
Yeah,
not beating
tough.
Yourself up completely, not beating someone else up for getting out there and having a failure, learning a life lesson. That's okay too. So maybe we need to reevaluate how we look at failures off trail.
I think society could I think society could definitely catch up to our ultra runners' failures. That's for sure. I mean, I think there's too much, and part of it's a high stakes mentality. Part of it's a general anxiety and fear that we seem to be dealing with in today's society. But I know, at least in my work with kids. And I know in some of the most cutting edge entrepreneurs, I mean, you know, the guys down in Silicon Valley, I mean, one of their watchwords is fail forward. You know, they want to fail. They're going to throw, those Google and Facebook guys are going to throw 10 things up against the wall, and 9 of them aren't going to stick. But, you know, the one that sticks is going to change the world. And I don't think that that's a bad thing, a lesson to teach our kids. Now, do we want to, you know, drive their self-esteem into the ground? Do we want to, you know, create a situation where there's no success? No, of course, you know, because then you have the ultimate, the opposite thing where, you know, you have an entire society that just has a, you know, sort of universal inferiority complex. But I think right now it's so funny talking to Craig Thornley. He'll probably get mad at me for saying this, about every year he gets, you know, what, 60 or 70 letters from people who want special consideration to enter into Western States 100. And he's like, you know what? Not everybody is so special. You know, and I think and it's kind of a joke, and it's sort of true. And we have kind of grown up, or some of our kids have grown up in a world where they're all felt to be or taught to be that they're all special, and they are all special and unique and wonderful and great. But, you know, they aren't necessarily deserving of an automatic bypass of the lottery to get into Western States.
That's interesting.
Got a word?
I have one, and it's actually two words that are kind of the same word, and it's completely a little bit off these.
So, war. Tell us your word.
I don't need to keep building it up. Here's the word, and it goes back to the theme for it, and it's more than just running. It's if it was just running, you would have quit. This is one thing that I love about running, and that
is this the word? What's the word?
The technology and the gear.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
I love the technology and the gear. I love the cool watches. I love the cool hydration things that are coming out. I love the, you know, we were up at the Tahoe 200 and seeing the spot things that help track the runners. I just think that is just cool stuff. So anyway, let's move on.
No, because I'm with you. Yeah, Scotty, I am totally with you.
A new pair of shoes. I mean, they're just cool.
I'm going to jump in with the watches. What are you doing? I'm about to get video bombed by my son. Say hi, Logan.
Hey, Logan.
He just obviously got back from a workout at 10:30 at night here in the East Coast. No, this is no sponsor plug. These Suunto watches are amazing, right? And Strava has changed my life. So I've always been kind of the old school curmudgeon. I just need to know how far I'm going. But Scotty, I am absolutely with you on my gadgets and my mileage and knowing, you know, how far I've gone and how fast I've gone and what temperature it was that day. I mean, I've always been a geek about like keeping my running journal and all of that. Now it's just all on my wrist.
You know, I have to jump in and ask you a question, just to go down a little bit of a rabbit trail. I don't get Strava. I know a lot of people are into it. I think I may even have a Strava account that I set up when it first came out. I don't use it and I don't get it. So you got sell me on Strava.
Oh my gosh.
Freeman, do you use Strava? You don't use Strava, do you?
Well, if I was faster, I'd use Strava. Doggone it.
I don't want people to know how slow I am. So sell me on Strava, AJ.
So, I mean, well, okay. I'm just going to make a quick call here, you know, and that's one, it's just great for keeping all your data. You know, and you can get graphs and charts and see what you've done for the last year. And you can click on something, see what your weekly mileage is, your monthly mileage, your elevation, your time running, it's all just right there. Now you can get that on a regular, you know, watch program from Garmin or Suunto or whatever. So you can get that as well. But Strava also has, and this is the second layer, sort of the social media / competitive aspect to it, where you can do everything from compare yourself to other runners on certain segments of trail, you know, like Walmsley last week, you know, pretty much got every segment of the Grand Canyon that's ever been set, you know, with someone at least on Strava, to, you know, your neighborhood 5K loop and whether you did it faster this week than last week and so on and so forth. And you can set up these little clubs with your friends. And, you know, so the three of us could set up a little, you know, Trail Runner Nation club and we could compare, you know, oh, wow, Scotty, you did 3 miles in 18 minutes. That was awesome, dude. You know, and, you know, and go like that. So, and then all the usual social media stuff, like you can comment on it, you can like it, you can do all that. So, I mean, most of your listeners probably know this stuff, and so I'm teaching you.
I'm a curmudgeon.
That's why I like it. But I only started liking it when I got this watch that is like wearing a computer on my wrist. Like, I don't even have to hook it up to the computer. It syncs right onto my phone so that it all just happens.
Okay. Okay. Freeman, what do you have about technology and gear? You're a gear nut.
Yeah, well, I mean, who doesn't love some new gear, right? And slipping on a new pair of shoes, that's one of the best things ever. And I'm so happy with the shoe I found. I mean, I just love, you know, not to sound like AJW was talking about some kind of sponsored spot, but, man, I have just loved sliding into that Ultra and having the room for my toes. I just love a new pair of shoes. So I love gear.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to talk offline about the Ultras too, because I've fallen in love with those as well. You know, as soon as my body adapted to the zero drop, it's just like, oh, what a great shoe. Yeah.
I knew that you liked them, AJW, because I see you talking about social media. When you're sending pictures around of your shoes, I know that you found something you're happy with.
All right, I know, I'm not fast enough to get someone to pay me to do that, so I just do it.
I'm going to go to close this thing off. I'm going to do one final pick from Webster's Vest Pocket Dictionary. This time, Scott, you come up with the page number, 1 through 365.
137.
That's good.
7. That's going to be, let's see what that area gets us to. 137.
Might be in like the K's.
Yeah, we are in the G's. Okay.
In the G's. And okay, I'm gonna go 7 words down.
Okay, grade school, gradient, gradual, gratitude, all good words, graft, and grain.
Grain.
I mean, all those great words, gratitude, and I get grain. All right, so grain it is. You know, there are some things that are stated like try nothing new on race day, and some things you can get away with, but not your nutrition. That is a place that you want to stay true to your practice, because throwing in some grains that potentially could be harsh on your intestines, man, you are spending time in places you don't want to be. So, you know, body management, grains, and often need to be just avoided in the very longest trail runs. Anybody have something else besides
that? Was weak. That was so weak.
It was pretty bad. I could beat that.
You know what? Some of the most successful ultra runners of the last decade, as the boom in the sport has taken place, have really proven that it pays to go against the grain.
Ooh.
You know, they figured out a way to train in ways others haven't. They've found answers to questions that they didn't necessarily know even needed to be asked. I mean, look at Rob Krar. You know, after a collegiate career in which he was an outstanding middle distance runner, he found a way after a series of injuries and mishaps to you know, win Western States and you know, become a legend. You know, look at Casey Lichtai. You know, she lives in the flatlands in the middle of the country, came to Western States, got 6th place, came the next year, got 2nd place, just this past year came and won. Against the grain, she trained for Western States in the flatlands and won the thing. You know, I think sometimes it pays to just go against the grain.
Ooh, that was good. That was good.
That's very good, AJW. And I just want you to know what kind of friend I am. I saw that one straight away. But I said, you know what? why take it from AJW? Scotty?
So this is how I would equate a grain to running. You know, we had a Don and I had a good friend that we used to run with, and he used to say on an ultra, when you get that small little grain, that little pebble in your shoe, he said, you don't take your shoe off and take it out. You start playing with it with your toes and try moving it around from one side to the other. He says, you know that you finally made friends with that grain when you've given it a name and you've made friends with that grain in your shoe. So that's how I would equate it.
That was good. Which
hey,
is,
Don, you lost that round.
I came in 3rd place on my own word. I think Travis beat me.
You're M3 in that one.
I'm on the podium. I'm on the podium, and yeah. and Travis Macy's looking at the three of us standing high on the podium here.
Yeah.
Oh, that was fun.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, when we came up with this topic, it's no surprise that, you know, there are ups and downs in your training. There's ups and downs in your running career, if you will. And we would have all hung up our shoes and given it up if it was just going out and slogging miles. But trail running is more than that. It's getting out, enjoying nature, finding the calm, finding the therapy, playing with our new gear, playing with the grain, going against the grain. That's what makes this a really fun sport.
Yeah, and I want to jump in on that too, Scott, and say that the topic really appeals to me because it's, you know, I want to run for my whole life. You know, I'm a year removed from surgery. You know, we're all getting, none of us are getting younger. And sometimes we need to find other ways to motivate ourselves to run. And I think what we've found in this little niche sport of ours is there's all kinds of other reasons to run. Yes, the physical benefit, you know, is without fail why we do it. But there's so much more that makes us, you know, makes our lives more worth living. And the way Travis, you know, articulated it so well when he spoke about calm is, I think, really true. And if it was just about running, you know, we'd probably have figured out something else. But it's not just about running. It's about a lifestyle. It's about a way of being. It's about who we are. And then that ties all into the community and why we're still together and how we can connect across 3,000 miles. You know, I think that's the beauty of it, and something that, frankly, no matter what the changes in technology, no matter what the changes in society, no matter what the changes in politics and religion, pick your poison, we've got it. You know, we've got it here, and we need to keep our eyes on that.
Well said.
Yeah, yeah, very, very, very good. And I learned from my last failure not to try to enter a race with two guys that are faster than me. I was M3 on the last round of comments. I'm just going to back right off and say, you guys nailed it with your clothes. So, well done.
That's okay. I don't think either of us have ever done a 200-mile race. Have you, Scotty?
No. So I watched one.
Yeah, you got us on that.
I stayed in a Holiday Inn Express.
At least until next September.
But yeah, you hear that? Yeah, no. You're committed. I caught that. That's my new ringtone. I'm going to produce that and send it out to the masses. AJW, next September, we'll have 200 miles under his belt. Like it. Go out and run.
Mas.